Welcome to TWIM with Seth, Andy, and Ben. We are brothers and a cousin who discuss all the movies in wide release, starting with the top box office from last week, reviews of movies opening this week, and previews of the movies coming out next week. We also won't spoil any of these movies without first giving you a warning. Did you guys know today's Star Wars Day? We're recording on...
May the 4th be with you.
You know, Star Wars Land is opening, I think, next month at Disneyland. I think it's the end of May it first opens up.
Is that going to be like an extension of Disneyland?
Yeah, it expands the park size significantly.
Oh, that's good, because it's so crowded there.
Yeah, well, you have to get a reservation to go there the first month, and they're all sold out. They crashed the website, apparently, right when it opened up.
Man, Disney can't do anything wrong right now. Wouldn't you love to be Disney? Money. I mean, they have the biggest movie of all time right now in theaters. They have five of the top 10 grossing movies of all time, all the Avengers movies and Black Panther, and they have Star Wars. They're getting to be a behemoth. I'm surprised they're not worth more than Apple by now.
News alert, Bernie Sanders wants...
To break them up?
He wants Disney to give all their proceeds to all the employees.
That would be cool.
To give them...
Their own employees?
Well, like, because they don't make as much, and
Bob Saget?
Who's the Disney CEO?
Oh, Bob Iger.
Bob Iger? He makes like $65
million. Oh, yeah. He's an overpaid CEO.
Well, I guess, anyway, that was just something in the news this week that he stated that Disney should, with all the proceeds from Avengers, they should pay all their employees more money and not their CEO $65 million a year.
He's a socialist.
He is a socialist.
Did you see how much Avengers made? I just looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes. It says $357 million.
Well, that was last weekend.
Oh, that was for last weekend? That's not even counted through this weekend yet?
Its total gross worldwide is almost $2 billion right now on the day we're recording. $1.914 billion. It's already, just 1 week out, it's number five all time for total gross. And it's expected to surpass $2 billion this week. Only four other movies have done that ever. It's got a really good start. It's broken all the records so far. But I still don't know if it's going to beat Avatar, because Avatar was in theaters for so many weeks. And I don't know if Avengers Endgame will, because Spider-Man is coming out. You know, a bunch of other big movies are coming out. I'm not sure if Avengers Endgame will have the legs that Avatar had.
Oh, that's interesting.
I wonder. The theater by my house, I've been checking, they still have show times every 30 minutes.
Really?
A significant portion of the movie, like the seats, are sold beforehand. Because you can see it on the app, you know?
I don't doubt it. Okay, so Avengers Endgame came in at number one, big surprise, in the box office last weekend. It was first week out, like you said, Ben, $357 million domestic over the weekend, but it's already almost $2 billion.
I mean, there's so much to say, but I also want to be careful because there are a few spoilers in it. But when I first saw the movie, because we were talking last week about the theater, the people in the theaters were so loud and clapping and cheering. And
yeah,
I feel like I missed a little bit because it was so chaotic in the theater and there was so much happening. Like, it took me a minute to process it all.
Yeah.
And so as I reflected on it, I had all these questions like, well, what about this? What about that? And maybe this doesn't make sense. I saw it again, and I would say I enjoyed it so much better the second time.
Really?
Yeah.
I've heard that from a lot of people.
What time was it at, and were the crowds as big?
Oh, I went at noon. I just, like, there was a noon showing I went to. The crowd, there must have been 30 or 40 people in the theater at noon.
Really? And were they cheering, and was it like being at a football
game? No, there was no cheering. I loved it. Like, everyone was quiet. Okay. And you know what was so great about it?
So you just needed people around you to shut up so you could watch the movie, right?
Yeah. But what was so great about it, seeing again, is I knew what was going to happen, but I was able to focus on the situations more, the people, and it was so much more rewarding to see it the second time. In all of my questions I had initially, they buttoned them up really well beforehand and afterhand.
Any after of them that the you moments. Can think of?
Some of them are kind of spoilers.
Oh, okay.
But there are a few scenes where they telegraph it beforehand, it happens, and then afterwards, like any loose ends, the characters discuss them and explain why that it is the way it is.
I think we should lift the spoiler embargo, because the Russo brothers are lifting the embargo on Monday.
Yeah, on Monday.
And they're going to go ahead and like post stuff, spoilers. I think we should just discuss spoilers openly.
Explain to our audience who the Russo brothers are.
They're the directors of
and
this
me.
Movie. I know who they are, but can you please explain for everybody else?
Who are they? The directors of the
movie. Yeah, they directed the movie. Do you remember the scene where Captain America was sitting in like this counseling session and there was a gay guy talking about his date?
Yeah.
That was one of the Russo brothers. I don't know which one. Joe.
Oh, that was the guy talking about. They said, how was it? Well, he started crying when they brought out the salads. Then I started crying at dessert.
Yeah, that was interesting, huh? Because of all the scenes they could have cut out for time because it was a 3-hour movie, I was thinking that scene was like, it was memorable and everything, but they probably could have cut that out if they needed to. But when you're the director, you don't cut yourself out. That's just like,
do you think that's
why would you?
I thought that was important to convey how it affected everyone. Like what happened in Infinity War, it wasn't just undone the next day. Like everyone dealt with the consequences and there were ramifications.
I totally agree with you. I think that actually was a pretty important scene because we needed to kind of feel the aftermath of what Thanos had done and see what the consequences would be.
Yeah, and there was a theme of loss, like losing loved ones, that was dealt with directly throughout the whole film, which I know it can be really triggering and evoke a lot of emotions, but it was done really well. And that's something they did really well, and it could have been just a train wreck.
Hi, this is Seth, just cutting in real quick. During editing, I decided to move the rest of this conversation to the end of the episode because we try not to spoil Avengers Endgame. We end up giving away some pretty big spoilers for Avengers Endgame. So the rest of this conversation has been moved to the end of the episode in the spoiler section. Okay, so should we move on from Avengers? We already did. We did a deep dive spoiler review last week. Should we move on?
I have one last thing to say. You know, we were talking about how do we think this movie is and how do you think it's going to last? This is one, after I saw it the second time, even during the second time, I think this movie is almost perfect. It could very well be a perfect movie. It was done incredibly well, especially considering how many characters, how many movies they had have correlate and everything that happened. It was done incredibly well. The first time after we watched it, we're talking about, this didn't quite make sense, or I'm not sure about that. But I think I just missed those details the first viewing.
Yeah.
So they did an incredible job with it.
Don't you think sometimes we need time with a movie to know what really its value is? Because you pointed out on Twitter a couple months ago, Avatar was a top grossing movie of all time, but it has almost no cultural impact.
Right.
But on the other hand,
Inception.
Inception. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it performed in the box office, but that's had a huge influence on culture.
Yeah.
And so I feel like maybe we just need some time to see how this feels, you know, in 5 years, like when we look back on this. Okay, so that's Avengers Endgame. It was great. It's number one movie of all time, maybe. We'll see. Okay, let's move on to movies opening this week.
Do you want it to be number one?
Do I want it to? I would definitely prefer to see it above Avatar.
I think Avatar, it deserves okay, to be number one all time.
Me too. Yeah, I don't think Avatar is really worthy of that. And I'm not sure.
No, Avatar is crap. Avatar was a novelty because they were touting this 3D. It was marketed like crazy, this new advance in 3D. Remember, there was all this talk about, every movie in the future is going to be 3D, and like 3D TVs were on the rise. So it was this moment with 3D that... Mm-hmm. I think everyone was really interested in.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it, but I don't know if that accounts for...
I really liked Avatar.
I did. Yeah, I liked it. I really did. Zoe Saldana is in it. That's funny. She's in both these movies. They're doing another Avatar too, but I'm kind of curious to see what happens because I'm expecting the next Avatar to maybe break, not even break $1 billion, where the first one did to almost $3 billion. So I'm just curious to see. Like, it doesn't seem like it was the quality of the art that made it so popular. It was more like the technology.
Yeah. Did you ever see the SNL skit where they're complaining about the font used in Avatar?
No.
Ryan Gosling was the guest host, and they did this skit, and he's this guy obsessed with the font they used in Avatar because it's papyrus. It's this really... It's a font you see all over the place, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like Open Sans where people just hate it. But to me, it's a font I look at like, I hate that font. Why did they use it?
You mean Comic Sans?
Yeah, sorry, yeah. You're right.
Like totally overused. Yeah.
Yeah, I said it wrong. So he's complaining about that the font they use. And he's like talking to his therapist. He drives by like the guy's house who like came up with it, and he's like looking at his window. And so they said, so he's like he's ranting to somebody about Avatar font. I can't believe they did that. How did that guy get by the all these producers and everyone? How did that get through? And somebody says, well, you know they're making a new Avatar, right? He's like, they are? Maybe they'll fix it. Maybe they'll fix it. And he watches the preview and they is this still the same font.
I can't eat. I can't sleep.
What's wrong?
It haunts me. I forgot about it for years, but then I remembered that Avatar, a giant international blockbuster, used the papyrus font as its logo.
Avatar, the movie from like 9 years ago?
Yeah. He just highlighted Avatar, he clicked the drop-down menu, and then he just randomly selected papyrus, like a thoughtless child just wandering by a garden, just yanking leaves along the way.
And so now you're worried about the sequels that are coming out?
They're making more?
Yes, I think I heard that one.
So they changed the artwork. They fixed it.
It looks similar.
He just got away with it. This man, this professional graphic designer.
That's funny. Okay, let's move on to movies opening this week. There were four movies out in wide release this week, starting with El Chicano. It's 40% on Rotten Tomatoes. We haven't seen it yet. It might be a decent... you know, I'm going to look up real quick if it's projected to be in the top 10.
It's 45%. I want to see that one.
The audience score for El Chicano is 84% on Rotten Tomato.
Oh, interesting.
Tomatoes.
I'm just wondering if we should, like, try and catch up with it.
You know, it's doing better than The Intruder.
What?
By Rotten Tomato scores, yeah.
Oh, on scores. Okay, not in the box office, though. Okay, El Chicano is projected to be number 11 in the box office this weekend, so it may not crack the top 10. None of us have seen it yet. But I don't know. I don't know if we're ever going to see it. Are we?
I want it.
Okay.
I don't know if we have... How many are coming out this week again?
Two.
So I don't know.
Three.
This might get put off to the back burner, but I do want to see it.
Yeah. Okay. It's 40% on Rotten Tomatoes. Ben already mentioned it's 80-something for the audience score. And maybe we'll catch up with it. It looks like a good action movie. Okay. Projected to be, working up from there, Breakthrough Ugly Dolls. Okay, projected to be number 4 in the top 10 box office this weekend is Ugly Dolls. Short and stubby, nubby teeth out on full display. You're pinkish red, got this thing on your head, and whoa, girl, you couldn't look better. Cause there's a scramble. I just played a clip from the trailer for Ugly Dolls. It's 36% on Rotten Tomatoes. Looks a little bit like a kid movie only. Did you see it, Ben?
No. I considered going this weekend with my kids.
It looks like a babysitting movie, the kind that like parents aren't going to be entertained,
yeah,
but maybe you can put it on for your kids.
Yeah, like you would never watch it ever if it was like the last movie on Earth unless your kids
wanted
to watch
it. Oh, I don't know about that.
You got some stuff to do. You put it on. Like, kids, just sit here for a minute. I got to do some stuff in the kitchen.
I like Kelly Clarkson, though. She's got such a great voice. She looks like she's the voice of the protagonist. And she's a great singer. I love listening to her music, so. It probably has some redeeming qualities. Okay, and that is Ugly Dolls. The next movie out this weekend, projected to be number 3 in the top 10 box office, is Long Shot.
Oh my God.
Do you think that'll like go viral?
This is the news!
On your mark, get set, go,
Lynn. We found a lot of interesting stuff when we hacked into his webcam.
Don't open it! No comments at this time, thank you! What's going on with you, brah?
Did you just call me brah?
Oh God.
Nobody saw it.
My mother found it on Facebook.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Long Shot. It's 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's the highest rated new movie out this weekend out of the four that were released this week. And this stars Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen, an unlikely pair because Charlize Theron is
a babe.
Yeah. So it's kind of a mismatch. I have a lot to say about this movie, but why don't you guys tell me what you thought?
Do you prefer to, like, I tend to just like start jumping in and shooting darts at it and not chronologically. Do you guys like to kind of do a review of it first?
In the non-spoiler section, I feel like, I don't know, is there anything to even spoil with this? Just say whatever you think about it. I don't think we need to go in chronological.
I was dreading seeing this movie. I just thought, really? I thought I had seen everything I needed to see in the preview.
Yeah.
But he is such a talented, funny guy, although he swears a lot. But he's really, he's just so funny.
Yeah. They were both really funny.
Do you know what, Ben? Last week we were talking about, like, is Charlize Theron actually funny?
Yeah.
We know Seth Rogen can be funny, but is she funny? And when I was watching this movie, I feel like she actually is extremely funny. She just always plays the straight man. You know, but she's really good at it. Because Charlize Theron instantly had really good chemistry with Seth Rogen, and they were funny together, and she played off him really well. Like, she made him funnier because when she played it straight.
But do you think, I think about this a lot, like, there's this idea, I heard someone talk about it, that all the greatest actors come from England, and they have this like tradition of like acting schools, and I'm wondering if, like, because this is part of the problem I had with this movie, like, I was totally entertained the entire movie.
But
at times I felt like they go to the lowest denominator. How do you say that? The lowest
lowest common denominator.
Yeah, of like cheap kind of gross humor where it doesn't take quite as much finesse in acting. And so sometimes I'm a little bit offended by it, just the idea of,
right.
I don't know how to.
I know what you mean. It's like some jokes. They're like they don't know how to be funny, so they just make like toilet humor.
Right.
Or they get vulgar.
Like, I remember, and this is, I kept thinking, am I a degenerate? Like, I came out of my mom's womb as like this pure, innocent baby.
I was wondering what you were going to say there.
15 years ago, I walk out of anger management with Adam Sandler because they were like checking each other's penis size. And I just thought, and then yesterday there was something in the movie that was probably worse than that.
About masturbation?
Yeah. And I just like, I'm wondering like, what's going wrong with me? I'm like going on a spiral down where nothing offends me. And I don't know if you guys,
that was the kind of joke I haven't seen since Something About Mary. Like,
yeah,
you don't see those jokes. Yeah. Andy, I know what you mean. Of course, with Seth Rogen, you know, it's going to be vulgar like that.
Yeah.
It was incredibly funny. I was laughing the entire time.
Well, and the truth, the part that was really funny, that humor. Okay. So humor, there's a difference between really good humor and talent at acting. But when she said like, oh, all of you guys masturbate, she said that to everyone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like, you all do it.
That type of humor is funny because when it's something's true, it's funny. And that's probably for the majority, that was probably a true statement. Having said that, I don't know if all of the, sometimes I feel like we have an inferior acting ability as Americans. Okay, these guys are definitely talented actors, but it feels like maybe they're capitalizing on bathroom humor a little bit too much. Does that make sense?
I feel like that probably turns off a lot of people. I remember I was so excited to see Borat. I was excited to see it. I snuck out of somewhere else I was supposed to be when the day it came out. And I remember halfway through the movie, I'm like, I can't sit through this. I'm leaving. And I just walked out because it was just too crude for me.
Yeah,
you would have walked out now?
It's a funny phrase, like lowest common denominator, because I think you get low enough where you start turning people off, you know?
I agree.
I know what you mean, but I didn't feel like Long Shot was that bad a humor. There was that body fluid joke that happened in Something About Mary.
Yeah.
But the rest of it was, you know, it reminded me so much of Veep. Seth, you've seen Veep, right?
Yes, it did remind me a lot of Veep.
So Charlize Theron is...
It's Charlize Theron.
Okay.
According to her.
I'm going to mispronounce it.
Okay. That's fine.
So Charlize, she is... Her equivalent was... Like, there were three people equivalent from Veep in this movie. Because, you know, the vice president has her bag man. And so that was represented here. And then she has her chief of staff, which is like Amy from Veep. So their interactions and how they walk through with Charlize and these her two like helpers, that was heavily inspired by Veep. Their interactions, vulgar stuff between each other. So that's what I thought initially, and I can see why it came across so vulgar, but I think they were just doing a Veep they were just inspired by Veep.
I totally agree. Yeah.
And I think that that shows, like, I think a lot of artists of all different genres build upon, like, current formats going on. Yeah,
they
on.
Build upon each other, huh?
Yeah. And I did really actually think one part was really funny. I loved his black sidekick friend that was, he was a GOP and a GOD believer.
Oh, you know, that's that was, O'Shea Jackson Jr.
You know, that was really interesting what they did, because they didn't just
did pick. You know he's Ice Cube? Cube's son.
I did not know. Oh, really? That.
Yeah.
But he's a really good actor.
Yeah.
So in this movie, they brought up politics and started to bash one side. And then he finds out that his best friend has the opposite views. And so they bashed both sides equally in a way that was like heartwarming in yeah. how they like okay. connected on that.
I have a more cynical take on that, Ben.
Go but ahead.
By the way, though, I do feel like that was maybe the funniest scene of the movie is when he finds out that his lifelong best friend is a Republican. He's like, what? I don't even know. What's happening? Like yeah, his says, whole world.
You're Republican, and am I racist?
but my here's my cynical take, Ben, because this seemed to have very liberal political messaging.
Okay.
And it seemed like a studio executive was worried about turning off half of the population
by politics. I could see that.
And so they add in this token black best friend, for one. But secondly, they make a point that he's a Republican.
And he's black.
Yeah, exactly. So they're like covering all their check boxes with this one character. Okay. It's like when they have a character who's yeah. gay and a minority and deaf. Like they're like, oh, we just got to cover like our diversity. Yeah. We
look
have
how diverse
bring in this
we are.
One character. Yeah,
I do think that they did that a little bit, but I do think he was a really good standalone actor.
Oh, like, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that should take nothing away from him as an actor, because if you watch the scenes, he actually outshone Seth Rogen.
I thought
he was more charismatic.
Actor.
His lines were funnier. His delivery was better.
Yeah, he was great.
Like I would have rather seen him coming when they were jetting around the whole world. I wish he had come with them, because he added so much like
yeah he was
color
a, to he was the, a sidekick, but yeah, he should have been in the whole thing.
Right, and he was a great sidekick,
and that's yeah. that's kind of like, you know, I remember hearing about Guns N' Roses performing somewhere, and the band before them did so good that they were pissed off and they like left.
Yeah,
they left the concert.
Right,
because Axl Rose was a little bit crazy
because they felt threatened by a better performer.
And yeah. I agree with you. I think that, I don't know if this is what you're saying, but I think he's a better actor than Seth Rogen. I think Rogen relies on kind of the crude humor a little bit and swearing, and that's just my opinion. And I get turned off. He feels a little bit like Adam Sandler to me.
Okay. So here's, yeah, this is the thing. When I started watching the movie, I'm like, okay, Seth Rogen, he's kind of like, I'm not going to say gross, but he's kind of like, he's a schlub, you know? And his humor wasn't really bringing it for me at the beginning of this movie. And then you see Charlize Theron, who's elegant. And then her character in this movie is very powerful. And it's like, how are they going to make me believe that yeah. these two actually get together? I'm not going to believe it ever happens. But then you see Seth Rogen's character. And as the movie went on, I began to actually admire and respect him more, because he's a person who, at least the character, he has very strong convictions, and he's uncompromising.
Yeah.
And he's an idealist.
Like,
and he'll quit yeah. his job if he doesn't agree with the boss. And then, you know, the Secretary of State offers him like this cushy, awesome, prestigious job. And he's like, I'll think about it, because I don't know if you're going to do something good, or if you're just going to do all politicians. Exactly. And yeah. she was also an idealist, but she was
more of a sellout.
A sellout.
She'd
yeah,
been beaten
she was
down.
A compromised idealist.
And yeah.
So you could see why she would kind of respect him and be attracted to him.
Yeah. And he had a lot of character that really shone through
mm-hmm.
throughout the movie.
It's kind of like me as I feel like I'm like a apostate Mormon. If I found this perfect Mormon girl, I'd be like, oh, I like you, you know? Anyway, that, can you delete that from the
what?
Next, from
no, I'm keeping that.
Okay.
I'm keeping it in.
So
that's going to be on the highlight reel, Andy.
So there were a couple moments. I wish there was one scene. They would just play this one scene in the preview. It's the scene where he has to go through the security checkpoint and take everything out of his pockets. It's like, okay, I have, like, he takes all this marijuana paraphernalia out one by one, trying to explain it. And these pills are so, they're energy pills. And this powder is, well, it's empty. That's the energy I use. And here's a new one.
That was and this so is prescription. Funny.
Yeah.
So, this okay, prescription, I have some thoughts about that scene, Ben.
This helps me smoke the prescription. And are you a real cop? You're not a real cop, are you? Are you just security? He was, that was so funny. I was dying.
Okay, Ben, that scene, I was really laughing. They didn't deliver very well on that scene because it was a lot of buildup and suspense. Like, what's going to happen? And all they do is just cut to him meeting with the Secretary of State. But what I was thinking they were going to do is like, this guy, the security guard, he hasn't said a word. And I bet they're going to, like, at the end, the punchline is going to be like, no hablo inglés. And like, I thought that was what was going to happen.
That would have been good.
Because that would have been a good, like, conclusion to the joke. They
it
totally
would have been
left
like Indiana Jones shooting the guy after he does this karate thing.
Yeah, because you notice that guy, he did look, he looked like Hispanic or something, and he didn't say a word
the whole
time.
Yeah, they could have. I wonder if they brainstormed a lot of
they didn't,
scenarios
they
there.
Didn't pay off that joke, and there was so much suspense. I was like, well, what happened? How did he get through?
That
like, he had
would
all these
have been
drugs.
Incredible.
It was just so hilarious how he was trying to explain everything, like put some spin on like all of his drugs, why like, oh, this is just for this, and oh, don't worry about that, and let me explain this.
It's also a prescription.
He's
like trying to rationalize each drug he pulls
like
out.
Like, my boss took his dog to a hotel, and the owner said, let me applaud you for not pulling the service dog card. And I feel like everyone pulls the weed medical, medicinal, and that's what, anxiety.
Not here, Andy. They do free deliveries.
I know. I want to say something about, okay, so Seth brought up the point that he was so passionate about his beliefs, he quit his job. Seth, I think, missed the first scene that even pounded that.
Oh, yeah.
I did. Yeah, I missed it. But Ben, you gave me a good summary, and I'm glad you did, because I was sitting in the movie. Because right when the movie started, I was like, okay, guys, I got here late. I just saw Seth Rogen jump out a window and land on a car.
And it was fine.
And so I'm like, 2 minutes, can you explain what happened beforehand? And you gave me like a good little summary so I could understand like the tattoo and everything.
Yeah, and they were purposely like, because he was fleeing from these neo-Nazis, and they were purposely like anyone, they made him superhuman to point out that his convictions were so strong. Like anyone who jumps out a third story window and lands on their face on a car is going to die.
You know what it reminded me of is Kung Fu Panda, how he can just go bouncing down off buildings and stairs. He's totally fine. Because in the preview, they show Seth Rogen fall down that flight of stairs and like slap, you know, splat on the ground.
Yeah,
and he was totally fine. I thought it was so funny. Both those things. He should have been in the hospital, maybe died, but he was fine. Yeah.
Be a paraplegic.
Did that slapstick work for you guys? Because I thought it was okay, but I really thought the movie had better punchlines, better humor than the slapstick stuff. And it seemed a little bit unnecessary to me.
When he falls down the stairs?
Because it almost made me like lose my suspension of disbelief, because I was like, okay, come on. Who's going to do that and not die? Like, they jumped two stories at it. Like, I didn't...
Seth... That's what sold my wife on the movie. She loves really? When people trip and fall. She thinks it's so funny.
I thought that
that's true. I forgot that about Lisa.
I thought the window one was a little bit like painfully uncomfortable, but the one when he fell down the stairs was to me was just funny, because I remember in high school we used to act like we would trip in front of girls and like fall down the stairs and
girls love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they love it when they're teenagers. They're just thinking about seniors in high school and you're like seventh grade tripping in front of them.
I've tripped like that a couple times and thought it was so funny, and I've never had a woman or a girl enjoy it like I did.
It never got you a date.
I remember doing it at a dance, like in some mosh pit, and the people around me were like really trying to dance, and they started getting mad at me, like, get out of here, stop doing that.
Seth, and I remember in high school you were in some performance.
Yes,
and
that's
so
what I was going to say.
They block out all the lights, and then you see just silhouettes of people like coming on stage before they begin.
Yeah.
You just see somebody just totally trip and fall.
Yes.
And then it was you. I'm like, oh, that was so funny, because I knew you do that fake falling thing.
I did it as a joke. Like, I'm walking out on stage for the dance.
And people got mad.
And I tripped and fell. And the girl that invited me to do the dance, Jenny Wilkins, she was like, yeah, I saw that. That was stupid. And I was like, oh, now I feel bad.
Not
because,
to
like,
me.
She.
I thought it was so funny. I was laughing for a long time.
What teenage girl wants her boyfriend to trip? You know, like, she's like thinking of like this romance.
Well, maybe Lisa would have liked it.
It was the perfect, Seth, that to me was like the perfect opportunity, because
Like, yeah, it's dark.
They're going between performances, and they shut off all the lights, but you can still kind of see, and you can see silhouettes of people. But so you see something happen, you can't really tell who it is or like what happened. You just know that somebody face planted. That was so funny.
That is really funny. Jenny Wilkins didn't like it very much.
Do you guys think we are degenerate because we like that kind of movie with that humor? Or
I don't know, Andy. Honestly, I feel like it's okay. I know what you mean. Like the version of me 20 years ago would have been indignant about that, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And now I'm actually like enjoying it and laughing. But I personally feel like that's more maturing. I remember being at Ricks College, which is this like religious university, and somebody wrote a swear word on the sidewalk with chalk, and I walked around angry all day. So indignant, like, oh my gosh, what if kids saw that? Like, I was just so like self-righteous about it.
Yeah.
And I remember coming back in that situation 4 years later being like, what was wrong with me, you know? Like, why couldn't I just like loosen up a little bit?
Well, I feel that way about so many things in my life too. I guess I'm just like, you look back at the craft of the movies made, like Casablanca with Humphrey Bogart back in the 50s or 60s, mm-hmm. and there's no like sex scenes, it's just pure acting and story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the culture was different too.
Yeah.
I think you have a good point where, like, I think for my taste, I would have, like, if I was the director or editor, I would have cleaned some of that up because I don't think crude things are funny on their own, but you can make them funny, but they're usually just used as a crutch because people giggle when you say things.
It's lazy. Yeah. I mean, you know what I've noticed going through all kid movies is there's always a fart joke, and farts are funny. You know, farts are really funny. Boobs are funny. We've made jokes about boobs, but
kids love farts.
It's also lazy.
Except in Team America. It was crude the entire time, and it was hilarious.
I don't even know what that is.
You haven't... Team America...
Is that a cartoon?
It's the creators of South Park. They made like a marionette thing in early 2000s. Where Team America, anyway, they're like, you guys, I can't believe you haven't seen it. So what they did in Team America, it's incredibly crude, but is hilarious. Like the way they did it was very funny. If I told you the jokes, they sound so stupid. But when you see it on screen, you're like dying laughing and like, I laugh the entire time, like tears coming out. Just the way they craft the humor is really funny.
Hmm.
So they're the only ones I've ever seen do crude humor that was actually funny.
Well, in this movie, I could have done without it. I would love to see Seth Rogen transition from being like, have you ever seen him in any movie that where he wasn't getting high or had marijuana?
Not at all.
I'd like to see him transition into a character actor. And Seth Rogen is still trying to play that like 22-year-old high, knocked up version of himself. And this is probably the last movie he can get away with it. And I feel like Charlize Theron carried a lot of the weight. Like the cast was really, really good. And so he didn't have to like carry as much. Because I don't know if he's going to be able to carry as much in future movies.
I wonder. I think in this movie he proves he can be a serious actor. I think he really displayed that. There's something else I wanted to... I'm sorry you missed the first part of the movie about the tattoo, but the tattoo was symbolic of his transition.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, it had its own story arc, and it was like...
It was a good...
Really funny.
Visible, like, it literally... it was a literal symbol of his transition. Yeah, because it started out as, like a...
Half of a Nazi symbol, swastika.
Yeah, swastika. And it ended up being, like, a really meaningful... what is it? First lady, first man. What is it called?
First mister. What did he call it?
First mister. FLOTUS. I don't know. So it's like a FLOTUS badge for a man.
That was really funny because it was. I thought it was just going to be a gag, and she says, "Tell me about your tattoo." And it's like this swastika bottom feet and a guy like stick figure waving. And
yeah,
it looks so dumb. And then by the end,
it was
like,
funny though.
It looked kind of cool, you know.
Yeah, it
really worked.
I actually did like the tattoo at the end. I thought they had pulled it off. I guess what I was getting at overall is like one of the movies that I enjoy, two of the movies that I enjoy more, and they're both by the same director, Jared Hess, are Nacho Libre and
Napoleon Dynamite.
And I feel like he's able to direct those movies with good actors in a way that are just, they're not crude, but they're just so funny. And I feel like they're good actors.
Yeah.
And you don't
Because you don't have to be crude to be funny.
And you don't feel like you need to like, you couldn't, you just, just like there's I have to think about who I could go to that movie with. Do you know what I mean? Like,
this one long shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like and it's got to be like a raunchy like.
And who I could? Yeah, because myself 15 years ago, like my nephews just came home from their Mormon missions. Mm-hmm. I would never take them to those movies.
Then did Lisa like it?
She didn't go with me. She wants to see it.
I really wanted to take Karen because it was such a fun rom-com, but I know some of those parts she's going to squirm. So, all right. So we're still discussing, if you're just joining us, if you just went pee and you came back, we're discussing Long Shot.
Can I say one thing about Long Shot before I forget?
Yeah.
I am in no way trying to sound like self-righteous because I feel like I'm degenerate. And like I sat through that movie and laughed my head off and just enjoyed it. But then I just find myself wondering about the craft versus, you know, just cheap humor. That's all I'm wondering about.
Okay, let me just make a point about it. So we've talked a lot in the past about these movies that are basically a remake, but it's a role reversal with a woman instead of a man. And this story is basically Cinderella, but with a man instead of a woman, or like it's a gender swap, or Pretty Woman, you know, which is also a Cinderella story. Swapping the man and the woman. And I do think, like what I said in the past, it is inherently more interesting when a woman is doing the role. Like remember when we saw What Men Want? And that was a very similar thing. It was like a role reversal, but
right. It
was a lot more interesting to see a woman who's trying to like climb the corporate ladder, but she's like cut out of all these poker games and the boys club and stuff for her to see like what men are thinking. Like it was a different story and because it was a woman doing it. In this movie was very feminist if you think about it. She was in control. She was like powerful. She
hushed him away at times, like I need to go do my important business.
Yeah. And at the end of the, you know, when they get together, he fully supports her in her role as like, I don't know, not just the wage earner, but like
everything.
I totally agree. Didn't he take her name at the end?
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. You
it was
kind
of used as a gag, but that was funny.
Okay, guys, before we finish with this movie, tell me who your favorite character was besides the main two, besides Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron, because there were some funny side characters.
His best friend.
Yeah, Ice Cube's son. He was so funny. Okay, did you notice Andy Serkis in this?
Who is that?
He was the Fox News.
Oh, they were making fun of Fox News.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the parody of Fox News?
He was the owner of that newspaper.
Conglomerate, right? Yeah. So who's the real life version of that? Who's the Fox News guy?
I don't know his name, but I know. I mean, it was in that movie we saw, The Vice. They talked about him. Remember Vice with Dick Cheney?
Hold on, I'm gonna find it. I'll Rupert Murdoch. Okay, so he struck me as a parody of Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, and I watch Fox News a lot, and I think people might have read.
You go out of your way to remind me every time.
Like I said, watching Fox News is basically admitting that you're a pedophile.
But Andrew, you said that, and it was funny. You said it last week, but the scene where he finds out that his best friend is Republican, that was so funny to me because it's so true that it is not socially acceptable to be Republican. It's just not. It's like do you guys watch Silicon Valley?
Yeah.
Where the media finds out that this one guy is Christian and there's this big firestorm and he's like, oh, I was trying to protect the fact that he was gay. And like the handling agent is like, oh, no, that plays fine. That totally plays fine. Everybody loves that. But fact that he's Christian, what's controversial.
Yeah, there was a moment he says, what? You're Christian? I can't believe this. And it was so funny how they took offense to that in the
Yeah, because story. Doesn't it seem like half of America is conservative Christian, but for whatever reason, it's not politically correct. You know, don't you think that's interesting?
I think the majority of the United States identifies as Christian, like 75%. The number, I think right now it's about 20 or 25% of Americans do not identify with any religion, and that number is growing.
Okay, but I'm not talking just Christian. I said conservative Christian.
But
because that's different.
I'm not sure
like
what
I'm
that
Christian,
means.
But I'm not conservative, right? That is different. Like a liberal Christian is different. Okay. It's just different.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess what I was saying, were you saying, Seth, that the two guys that kept saying chauvinistic, sexist comments about women on the news, there was two guys.
Yeah.
You were saying that reminded you of Fox. And
it was totally a parody of Fox News.
But I was sitting there because I watch Fox and I was trying to, I literally, this is not to disagree with you, I was trying to decide who are these, because I watch the news and I never hear these kind of comments on the news.
Do you watch Fox and Friends in the morning?
Yeah.
Have you seen you So I Married an Axe Murderer? He's like, Mother, I know you're watching the news. He does air quotes. That's what I'm hearing when you call that the news, Andy.
Well, I just mean it's more like Fox Entertainment.
I know.
But even the logo.
I'm taking cheap shots.
Even the logo in this, it was a Fox News logo. They just changed it to like whatever it was.
I think you're right, but I was trying to decide where they got, where they came up with this idea of Fox being that nasty.
It was a parody.
Well, yeah,
they were just taking jabs.
Yeah, I was just, I guess I just, it seemed like
they had some funny lines though. They were like, "Oh, she's hot." And I respect women so much that my first comment is about how great they look or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I guess you can say because, you know, the president of the United States kind of resembles these actors in his humor and his bullying a little bit. You know, the current president, which I guess I did vote for, but he is a bully.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of like those guys a little bit on the news. So
That was
pretty dang funny.
It was a caricature, though. I mean, I don't think anybody really believes that's what Fox News sounds like.
No.
It was a caricature because they were taking cheap shots. That's what I mean. That's why I think they put in that scene where he finds out his best friend is Republican, because I think they were unabashedly liberal, the message.
Wait, you think Seth Rogen's a liberal?
Well, I think the movie's message was.
I'm just teasing you, Seth.
Didn't you think Andy Serkis is amazing that he can transform into a totally different person?
He looked like a troll.
Yes. You didn't recognize him, did you?
I don't even know who he is. I don't even know who you're talking about.
I pulled up his picture on IMDb, and I can't believe that's
he's Gollum.
Oh, that was Gollum?
Yeah, and he was one of the bad guys in Black Panther, if you remember. But he looked totally different.
Hey, he's got a niche role of being like this like dwarf. Like
he's a character actor. He just transforms into a totally different character. So I just want to point out a couple other actors. Bob Odenkirk was funny.
Which one was that one?
He was the president. He's Saul from...
Oh, he was really funny.
Better Call
from
Saul.
Better Call Saul and from Breaking Bad. And he does not care about the presidency at all. It's clear that he's just a puppet for, you know, these oil executives or whoever.
He reminded me of George Bush.
Yeah, kind of.
I thought it was funny. The Secretary of State walks into his office and he's talking about this big war thing going on. You're like, what's going on?
And there's a crowd around him.
Yeah. It's like, I was just practicing my lines.
But there were like five people there. Like, I guess he asked for an audience to come in while he practiced his lines.
He is so good in Better Call Saul. By the way, Andy,
he is so good.
You would, based on what you said, you would love Better Call Saul. It's not vulgar. It's not crude.
Yeah.
It's just a really interesting story about this lawyer who he's like kind of a dirtbag. And
he's kind of a con artist a little bit.
Yeah.
Not a dirtbag, just a con artist. Yeah, like he's got a heart of gold, but he's just a little bit dirty in the way that he makes his money.
Not dirty like, oh, you have a nice butt, but dirty like he does cheap
stuff. No, he's like, legally, I think I can wiggle us out of this if you just do this and we just pretend that. And I'll just tell this guy that, you know,
yeah, he's
like,
a
he has
bit
one
of
his clients
artist.
Make a like this fetish video to get him out of some ticket.
did you notice the meta humor? Because he's like, well, I want to do something more prestigious than the presidency. And she's like, what could that be? He's like, move from a TV actor to a movie actor. Yeah. Which is the meta humor is that he is a TV actor, but now he's in a movie.
Oh my goodness.
That was lost
a good
on
catch.
Me.
I thought that was so funny. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I can tell you were an English major.
Yeah,
I thought
so
they
I
set
thought,
that up so when he said it to the Secretary of State that when she said the same thing to
Seth Rogen's character,
they each had the exact same response.
Yeah, they're like, oh, not many other actors have done that.
But then they said Jennifer Aniston, and she's like, is she really?
Is she a star?
Is she a star?
That was really funny. I've never really like paid attention to who's a movie or TV star, because it seems like a lot of A-list actors are TV stars. And especially now in the golden age of television, I don't think the distinction is as meaningful as it used to be.
I like TV better than movies.
Me too. Charlize Theron was in... she was in Arrested Development, you know, but she is a movie star. But, anyway.
Yeah, she was Mr.
Funny.
F.
That was really funny. Okay, so we don't need to do a spoiler section of this, but in case you're in suspense, it ends the same way all romantic comedies end. But I do feel like it was better than the typical, what we normally see.
It's like a raunchy version of Hallmark.
So the end of every romantic comedy, there's a profession of love in front of an audience. I don't know if you guys have noticed that, but that's always, and it's always with an audience. But in this particular case, there was a reason for there to be an audience, because she was a public figure and she could call a press conference.
It made sense.
It seemed a little bit, more organic to me in this movie. So that was our discussion of Long Shot. Do you want to give ratings for that before we finish it?
Six.
6 out of 10?
Yeah, like it was entertaining, but I'd never want to see it again.
Yeah, I do like 7 out of 10. I thought it was like what we talked about. It was hilarious. I was laughing most of the time.
Me
too. It was
too.
Just a little too crude for my taste.
I feel like it's maybe the most enjoyable movie I've seen. I don't know. It was Mary very
Poppins?
Enjoyable. Little was very enjoyable too. I feel like this one was more funny to me. I was laughing straight through the whole thing. I don't necessarily think it was like high art or anything, but I feel like 83% on Rotten Tomatoes is good. That's about right. It was just so funny. I could not stop laughing.
Yeah.
When you just brought up that little, what's the little one?
Little, yeah.
My favorite scene in that was when that guy comes out on the balcony dancing and ripping off his clothes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You just wanted to say that?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and that is Long Shot. The next movie out this week is The Intruder.
You just bought the Peckups, right?
Yeah.
Charlie's quite a guy.
Just don't look too close under the mask.
His wife died in that house.
Mrs. Charlie took Mr. Charlie's shotgun in her mouth. At least that's how Charlie explained it.
Hey! Stop drilling holes in my house!
The man acts like the house still belongs to him.
And he's lonely.
I just played a clip from The Intruder. It's 27% on Rotten Tomatoes. Not critically acclaimed at all.
Really?
Starring Dennis Quaid. This is a horror movie. It follows the same formula as some prior horror movies, including Obsessed. Obsessed with, I can't remember who was in it. Anyway, what did you guys think?
It wasn't a pleasant movie, but people often ask me, do you want to go to see a movie? And I'm like, my brother asked me, I'm like, well, I've already seen them all. And he's like, well, which one do you recommend? And I was thinking about the two that I saw this week.
Yeah.
The one we just reviewed.
Intruder and Long Shot.
I was trying to think, which one do I recommend? Like, if I'm just, which one immediately comes to mind that I enjoyed more? Which one is it for you?
Oh, Long Shot by a mile.
Same here. I mean,
really?
Yeah.
See, for me, I...
Did you recommend The Intruder?
Yeah, I think I'm after we review things, it totally changes my feelings about it. But if I hadn't reviewed it with you guys, I probably would have said, well, gosh, I kind of was more... it was more intriguing, The Intruder.
Intruder was fun. I agree with you. It was fun. Like, and... I think that Intruder is always more fun with more like the more people, the better. Because it's kind of scary. It's very scary, actually.
And it was fun to see Dennis Quaid. I've never seen him in that role.
Yeah, he's never been the evil guy. But you know what? I came away from the movie thinking Dennis Quaid is excellent as a bad guy.
Right.
Like, he should always be playing the villain.
There were moments I thought he could play the Joker.
Yeah. Oh,
my
gosh.
He did such a great job.
He would be such a good Joker. There's something about the way his facial expressions were half of the movie, you know?
Yeah. And the way he was smiling in the mirror to like, let me look in the mirror and do a normal person smile.
Oh my God.
Because throughout the movie, he's like, he's kind of weird. And then you're starting to realize he has some sort of mental condition going on.
Yes.
And then it gets worse and worse and worse. And they show that on screen with how he interacted, just how he... I'm just was looking in the mirror.
I don't know if you've ever gone out with a date with a girl that's super hot the first time you meet her, and then you're just blinded by anything that might be a flaw, but as you slowly get to know her, you start to realize she literally is crazy. And that's kind of what this guy reminded me of.
Okay, I know what you mean. I have a lot of things to say about this. The first is, this movie delivered exactly on what the trailer promised.
Yeah,
exactly. In The Intruder, this Dennis Quaid's character was, I guess, interpreting signals from the wife that she was interested.
Dennis Quaid did such a good job convincing me that he's crazy that I'm wondering if Dennis Quaid is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when the movie's over, I'm like, there's something wrong with that guy.
Yeah. He was good.
It was subtle how it crept in, how his something's off about him. It subtly built and built.
Yeah.
And
built. It was, okay, this was PG-13, but there's this sexual assault scene. It's almost like it looks like it's going to be a rape scene, but it's, so there's this scene where he's watching her in the shower. Didn't that make your skin crawl?
Oh my goodness.
And you're just looking at his face and he has
uncomfortable.
He takes
his shirt off.
Yeah, he takes his shirt off and it's like, there's so much like buildup.
Like, what's he going to do? He just took his shirt off. He's going to run in there. And
then when he finally gets his hands on her, he starts licking her in the creepiest way.
But she was knocked out. She was knocked out. She was coming out of it.
I don't remember if she was awake or not, but I just remember him licking her in the creepiest way.
Licking her shirt. He licked her shirt up.
Like from her belly button up to her neck, kind of.
Well, I will never be able to see him in those commercials on TV the same now.
What commercials does he do?
He's like on these car commercials or something where he's driving a car.
Well, he definitely carried this movie. He was the star. Like,
and it's kind of,
whenever he was on screen, it was like fireworks. He brought so much energy.
It's kind of too bad because he was amazing in this. Dennis Quaid was amazing, but there was so much bad acting by other people. The best friend was a horrible actor. The woman, the wife, I feel like they just wanted her so they could like focus on her boobs and focus on her butt, then focus on her boobs and focus on her butt. She was just, it was too much.
But they kind of had to do that to lure the Dennis Quaid character in a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, you had to understand why Dennis Quaid was going a little bit insane.
Yeah, this was really creepy. Some things kept bringing me out of it. There were some movie making like big mistakes that just bothered me.
Like
for example, in the beginning of the movie, the audio, it just sounded fake. It sounded like someone was like me in front of a microphone speaking. Like you could hear.
So maybe it was like post-production voiceover work to change the dialogue?
I think almost every movie has post-production where they'll like dub over.
Yeah.
But something about that, especially when the wife was speaking, you know, like if you're close to the microphone, it gets loud and your backup gets a little quiet and you come back.
Yeah.
I noticed that going on with her audio. But then worse than that, the lighting was not consistent because there was the scene when they're sitting at the dining room table and the camera like cuts to one person's face and the other person's face.
Yeah.
Some people's face, they were almost looking at direct sunlight.
So maybe it was a reshoot or something?
I couldn't tell. But other people, it was super dark. But the worst is, you guys probably noticed this, the lighting was wrong most of the time. The worst is towards the end of the movie when she sees him by the side of the house, like doing his hair in the reflection of the car.
Yeah.
Then he chases her through the house.
That was so scary. He is so scary.
That was crazy. But did you notice when she saw him doing his hair, it was light outside. And then 2 minutes later, catches her and it's dark outside. Did you notice that?
That is funny. No, I didn't notice.
I did notice that, actually. I have a question for both of you, because Ben brought this point up, and I actually think it's legit. It maybe Seth brought it up. But we just watched the previews for the Joker origin with Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, my goodness.
And you were excited about that.
So excited.
Do you think Dennis Quaid could do as good as that guy now?
I just feel like he could be a real contender. I don't think he was even being considered, but he was incredible in this. Dennis Quaid was, wow.
I'm just like, it doesn't have to be the Joker, although that does seem to be like a perfect match for him. But he is such a good villain. You believe that he is crazy.
Like when he's sitting on his bed, like trying to make his face do things.
He's doing all these facial expressions in the mirror.
And maybe that's why I thought of the Joker, because in the Joker preview, Joaquin Phoenix is doing the same kind of thing where he's smiling and he has like this, it's a smile where his cheeks get really chubby, off to the side as he's smiling. And Dennis Quaid did the exact same face.
Okay, Dennis Quaid is 65 years old, and he is ripped. Did you notice a scene where he took off his shirt and he's got like a six pack, veins all over his body? Did you notice that, Ben?
No.
I noticed his arms, but I didn't see his six pack.
Oh, yeah. They just did a cut of like the top four of his six pack. And he was so lean. I was so jealous of him.
But he's pretty bulky on the top. Like, he's strong. Like, he's not skinny.
He must be working out like crazy. So I did like the... there was this juxtaposition of like a country guy and a city boy, right? And Dennis Quaid was like this country guy, and the city boy bought the house, and he was like, Dennis Quaid was constantly like, hey, this grass is growing. You got to keep up with it. You bought this nice house. You're not even taking care of anything.
Basically like our dads.
Yes. I did feel like that. Like it reminded me a lot of the older generation.
Yeah. There was a clear signaling because... Exactly, Seth, because that's totally our parents. There's so much, and our grandparents focus on keeping up the yard, doing the yard work, making sure the house is maintained. When they contrasted that with this younger couple who has their triggers, that's like this millennial thing, because she had her trigger about text messages,
right?
And his trigger about guns. So, that struck me as this generation.
I didn't even notice that. Yeah. I thought that's funny. Is that just something from like millennial generation is triggers?
Well, I think there's been the social awareness of things you get triggered by. And then I think a group of people, you know, make a lot of noise about triggers. And then a lot of things.
Maybe
like,
it's always happened over all of time.
Oh, sure. It's always happened. It's just there's more of awareness of it. And
I think
people like internalize like, well, this is my trigger and you have to know that. And I told you already, you know,
this is my trigger. Okay. So yeah, it was any closing like thoughts about it. I thought it was fun to see with Andy. It was really scary.
Maybe that's why I enjoyed it more. The thing I'm torn about is because I'm a single bachelor and I watch a lot of Netflix alone, and it's almost like a religious experience. I want to be alone.
Yeah.
I want to have but with movies, I feel like I enjoy it more when I'm with someone. It's a community.
Funny. We were laughing a lot at Dennis Quaid's performance, but it wasn't necessarily intentionally funny.
It was like creepy.
The things they were just so outrageous.
The things he would do are like the things like that you would never do. Like, my friend has a friend who got caught by her dad sniffing his daughter's underwear in her room. And masturbating.
My goodness.
Oh my gosh.
And he had snuck in the house. So what I mean, that's kind of the thing.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I think I would cut somebody's head off.
Well, you can cut. That's kind of what Dennis Quaid would do in this movie. He would do things that made you cringe.
Yeah. Like when he was sniffing her. She's like rubbing his feet or something.
He's leaning over. Oh, that was so creepy.
I was like, what is he doing? Is he trying to look down her shirt or something? And you're like, no, he's smelling her. And I was like, oh, that's so creepy.
But then she'd look at him and it would act like normal.
Yeah. Like, she was like really naive. Like, she didn't catch on. But then her husband, you didn't respect him at all either. He's like flirting with the girl at the frozen yogurt stand.
He was so flirty.
I felt like that they needed that because it wouldn't have been believable that she would have fell for him a little bit.
Like, she kept giving him openings, and it's because her husband was...
not faithful.
Well,
not that he wasn't faithful, but she perceived him as maybe not faithful. She was insecure.
They portrayed him that way too. Dennis Quaid's character openings?
Yeah.
Well, like her husband texted her, and that was one of her, like, she's mad about that. And then Dennis Quaid shows up with a pizza or wine or something. I don't remember what it was.
Oh.
And he's a psychopath.
It was like a perfect, she was in a vulnerable moment.
And they even had her friend say, well, he's pretty hot for an old guy.
Yeah. So, and he is. Oh, I mean, he really didn't think
of that. I thought as she was disarmed by him, and she just saw him as this old man who was kind of lonely, and she wanted to be nice.
I think it was both.
Yeah, I do too.
I think it was that end that she was kind of lacking some of like the fidelity that she wanted from her husband.
Yeah, her husband was like kind of a ding dong.
He was, I don't want to spoil it, but you knew they had some history that wasn't all that perfect. And,
yeah. And then you saw him flirting with that cashier. That was.
Yeah, it was just kind of.
It was a douche.
Right. He was like, oh, so vanilla and chocolate mixed? This kind of like you are? And I was like, oh, please. Like, that was so like.
But they had to do that, though, to open up the door for
her. No, it didn't bother me. It just made me not like him as a character.
Yeah. I thought he was a really good actor, though. I personally
but
did.
Do you think his eyes are really blue?
I don't know, but it turned me on. Just joking.
Okay.
I think you need to put that one in the beginning.
That is in
you
the...
Do you think his eyes were blue? I don't know, but it turned me on. Okay, sorry.
Andy, if I keep putting stuff at the beginning of the episode, is it going to make you have your guard up so you won't say the crazy stuff you always say?
Sometimes.
Because that might ruin it. You know what? I like you saying the crazy stuff.
Let's just not let Andy listen to it.
No, I think I've said some stupid things today, like, you know.
Okay, so that is Long Shot. I'm sorry, no, that is The Intruder. It's 27% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think mainly most of the critics that I saw were just gave it a low rating because it followed a formula. And that is not ever, you know, that's always seen as kind of a ripoff. So I thought Dennis Quaid's performance was really amazing. So I would give it more like 50%. What would you guys say?
I would say 7.5. I thought I'm really intrigued by acting that is not like have handicaps, you know, or like where they have a, what did we call that? Where they use
a crutch.
Mm-hmm. I feel like he's like a true actor.
Seven and a half out of 10, right?
So yeah. 75%. Just because it was like watching acting class, watching him act to me.
Yeah, I'm closer to the 60%. I mean, the best thing is it delivered on exactly what the preview promised. And it could have been so much better, I mean, for me, if all the other actors were trying to keep up with Dennis Quaid. Because he was carrying the whole movie almost alone. And then they were using that girl's, you know, the wife's sex appeal to carry the other parts. So it felt a little hollow, except for Dennis Quaid.
I would agree with that. I think he was hands down the best actor and carried the whole movie.
He did. He was incredible.
Okay, and that is movies opening this week. We covered all four of them. So let's move on to movies coming out next week, starting with Pokemon.
Stop talking! You're a hallucination!
You're a hallucination.
So you're a talking Pikachu with no memories who's addicted to caffeine.
I could stop whenever I want. These are just choices. Another round, extra shot, black as night. Thank you, sweetie.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Pokemon Detective Pikachu. It's 70% on Rotten Tomatoes. Looks like it's really funny. It's Ryan Reynolds being really funny.
Yeah. Have you guys taken your... Have you been with your kids when you saw the preview for it?
My nephew wants to see it badly.
Oh, really? I'm going to take Rocky. He loves Pokemon.
Yeah. My little nephew wants to see it so bad.
Same. My kids are so excited. During the preview, they just start calling out every... Charizard! Oh, it's Squirtle! And Pikachu. They're just... And I'm thinking, how do you know who these Pokemon guys are? Pokemon, whatever you call them.
Yeah. But this, I don't know how they know this. This Pokemon, I know how. This Pokemon syndrome spans 20 years. Because when my brother was 4, I was babysitting him and I took him to college with me, my college art classes. And he was sitting there while we were driving down to Provo playing Pokemon on his Game Boy. And all of a sudden he's like, oh my gosh, I just found the legendary Pokemon. And I was like, what the heck is he talking about? And then 20 years later, 15 years later, we're on this really fun trip in California. And he's like, hey, Andrew, can I borrow your car for a minute? And he's driving around.
He had to go get a Pokemon? He was playing Pokemon Go?
With that new app.
Oh, yeah.
And then when we were in Europe, he was trying to find all the Pokemons that you couldn't get in America and you could get in Europe.
Oh, Andy, I think the plural is Pokemon.
And then my little nephew, he would always correct me. No, it's Rattata, not Rattata.
Not retarded, Rattata.
No, Rattata is like a Rattata Pokemon. Okay. I don't even know how to say it right.
So I think Andrew's proven the point. I think kids are going to be so excited to see this.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, kids, like even like people in their 20s. It's going to be really popular, I think.
It looks like I'll enjoy it.
I kind of want to make a movie with like Hulk, the Avengers and Pokemon in it. And then.
Seems like it's going to be a busy movie because the Avengers was already busy.
No, I'm just saying add all those in so I can make money because everyone wants to see it.
Ben, in Rocky picked out a couple posters for his room. I thought it'd be fun to get him posters and hang them up. He picked out two that were like, it's like an inventory of the Pokemon. Like one had like 40 different Pokemon with their names and pictures, and the other one had like 12. And one of Rocky's favorite like gifts is the Pokemon cards. They're like baseball cards, but they're Pokemon. So I guess it's like a card game. I don't know how to play the game, but he collects all these Pokemon cards and loves them.
Do you guys remember Garbage Pail Kids?
Oh yeah.
Those cards?
Yeah. That was totally a fad, huh?
Yeah.
That came and went with
it. But it was kind of like baseball cards, garbage bill cards, Pokemon cards.
Okay, and that is Pokemon Detective Pikachu. The next movie coming out next week in wide release is The Hustle.
I'll just get a glass of water, please. I have to save all my money because I'm here to find my sister. She's been taken.
Taken? Like?
Like by men who sell hot white virgins to cajillionaires on yachts.
I am very moved by your story. Order anything you like.
I'll have a club sandwich and an order of fries. Two slices of cake. Do you want any cake?
No.
Three slices of cake and a Diet Coke.
Impressive.
I'm a con artist.
Sisters in arms.
I just played a clip from the Hustle. This is Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson. It looks hilarious. Is this a remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
Well, they haven't formally said that, but they're very clear in the messaging that it says, quote, like, giving dirty, rotten men a run for their money.
Oh, okay. So they're referencing
it. Yeah,
for
and,
sure.
And the scenes look just like many scenes from Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Like, they're on that house that overlooks the bay.
Yeah, okay.
And they're, right. You know, they meet on the train. It's very, it's clearly a remake, but they're not over the top. Well, what am I wondering here? It's not obvious, it's built upon it. But they're referencing it.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the actors, the male actors in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
Steve Martin.
Okay. Do you remember?
I don't remember the other guy.
Do you remember that part in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels? Your dad made us watch it.
Andy, it's one of my favorite movies. I watch it all the time.
Well, your dad was just...
Where he whips his legs?
No. Like, you know how when your dad or my dad laughs and their face turns red? But it was when he's like sitting at the table acting like he's like mentally retarded. Can I use the bathroom?
And he has an eye patch on. And
can I use the bathroom? And he's like, you see his face and he's like, thank you.
That is, yeah, when I was a kid, that was like the pinnacle of comedy to me. But
that was
I love Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I love it so much. I even named my car Lady Fanny because, you know, you can name your car through the app.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was she like the one that took him down at the end
of Lady Fanny from Omaha? Yeah, she's the one who gave the clue to the jackal that he was a con man.
Okay, I don't remember this movie well enough. I don't remember those names or anything.
I do have a question for both of you on Rebel Wilson. Is that her name?
Yeah.
I was talking to a girl this week. I guess this could loosely be about the dating section.
Oh, good. Okay.
She's this girl that's a product rep for us. So she tries to get us to buy equipment or use equipment. And so there's another guy named Nate. And then this girl's name's Lacey. And like, I'm a single dude. So they both call me. And I'm the only person in the office that will talk to salespeople. But anyway, I told her, look, if you take us to get alcohol, my boss will go. He likes alcohol. So we went to lunch. And I asked her, I kind of did one of those things where I was like, hey, do you want to go to a movie tonight?
Yeah. Did it work?
No. And I think she's just like a good saleswoman. She always invites me onto soccer teams, but I think she like likes me.
Yeah.
And then, I think she's a saleswoman. So
yeah.
I fell
you got
for
hustled by
a saleswoman.
Like, you thought she was interested, but really she's smart enough to use her sex appeal to make sales, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Or maybe.
That's how they get you.
I don't know. Yeah.
That's interesting, huh?
It was really disappointing.
So this movie, of all the movies I'm excited about this year, this is in the top five. So I'm very excited for The Hustle. And hope I'm not disappointed.
What I was going to ask you, Ben, based off this girl, we were talking about Rebel Wilson. Do you guys think, let's just talk about fat actresses. Do you think she would be a good actress if she lost all her weight?
Well,
she said no.
Who said
she would be a good actress?
I don't think,
I mean,
what, I don't think that's related really. You mean she's used in movies because she's only funny and she can like go bouncing down the stairs.
Yeah, I think she would be.
Her first role was Fat Amy. Like, she claimed.
I don't know if that was her first role.
Well, the one that I remember.
First prominent role. Yeah.
Most people remember from Fat Amy.
Yeah.
And that
Pitch Perfect.
She was playing off being fat.
So let me answer your question, though. That was a good question. Would she be funny? No, would she be a good actor if she wasn't fat?
Actress.
Okay.
Just teasing you.
No, I think women call themselves actors.
Okay, fine. I'm an idiot.
So. She's someone who her charisma really makes her, like, she's similar to Melissa McCarthy. Like, Melissa McCarthy is just really funny. I don't know if it would matter if she was fat.
Which one's Melissa McCarthy?
Oh, okay. She's in The Heat with, what is she
in
from?
Bridesmaids.
Bridesmaids. She's so funny in Bridesmaids.
She's got her start on SNL.
So.
Oh, she did. She was also in Gilmore. No, is it Gilmore Girls? What is the one with the mom and the daughter? daughter. Might be Gilmore Girls.
Well, there was a recent movie. There's a recent movie we saw with an actress that's large, and I don't enjoy her.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But Rebel Wilson, I think I would enjoy her fat or skinny.
Because what she brings isn't based on being fat.
Yeah,
she just happens to be fat. But it is interesting though that a lot of fat actors are really funny. A lot of fat people are really funny.
Why is that? Like
who's the guy on SNL, Ben? Chris Farley. He was so funny.
Freaking hilarious.
Would it have changed if he was skinny? I don't think so. I mean,
it might. Like that.
Well, when I wonder. Does
that striptease.
The physical comedy. Yeah, would.
Do you remember that one?
There's physical comedy based on being fat. Yeah, and all of them use it. That's true.
I wonder if Rebel Wilson is more funny because of her weight in this. Because that's a good question. It's something to think about. Like, I think she'd be a fine actress either way. But in this trailer, well, you guys remember Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, where there's a mark, or there's like the, what do they call it? Like the sucker, or whatever they're trying to scam, who's like sitting at the roulette table. And so each of these two con men are trying to outdo each other. And so they each go sit by their mark and like try to interact with her, right? So in the trailer for The Hustle, they have the same kind of thing where Anne Hathaway sitting down at the table and then Rebel Wilson comes up. Anne Hathaway says like, oh, try to be conspicuous. And Rebel Wilson comes up acting like she's blind and she has the cane. She's like kind of waving it in there like, excuse me, sir. And she's like, she reaches over and grabs like Anne Hathaway's boobs like, sir, move over, please. As she grabs her boobs. So
her weight's a little endearing.
Okay, can you think of anybody though, Ben, who you've seen them fat and skinny? You know how sometimes fat actors get really skinny and you see them in another movie, you're like, what the heck? But can you think of anybody that was fat and skinny? The only guy I can think is, it's a guy, he was in pretty mainstream. He's like a raunchy Seth Rogen type.
He was in
Evan Almighty and he lost a ton of weight. He was on this Netflix show with Emma Stone.
Yeah, he was in Beach Bum. He was in
What's his name?
Oh, God.
Do you remember? I'll look it up.
Yeah, he was in Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes.
Is he in Juno?
No. Jonah Hill. Okay, so Jonah Hill, he's really funny, fat, and he was really skinny in this Netflix show with Emma Stone. Maniac. Okay, he was in Maniac with Emma Stone, and he was really skinny. Like, he lost a ton of weight.
Oh, yeah.
He always yo-yos. His weight always yo-yos. But for whatever reason, like, he was not funny. Like, you could sometimes get glimpses of him, how he used to be funny, but he just seemed so low energy and depressed. I don't know if it's, like, calorie restriction or what's going on with him. But he is an actor that I think lost some humor when he lost weight. And that's the only example I can think of.
Interesting. Calorie restriction.
Well, that's interesting. But then you also got to wonder, Seth, if he just got... It was like this subconscious thing where they didn't see him as someone who could be in a humor role and they have to put him in a more serious role.
How could that be though, Ben? Because there's so many actors that are funny and they're skinny. I mean, being fat is not a monopoly on being funny.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know.
Oh, well, you know, if you've ever done yo-yo dieting like I have and you do a severe calorie restriction, your metabolism down-regulates and you are tired all the time and you're hungry all the time. And that's, you know, that's kind of your body's way of making sure you're going to rebound. It forces you to burn less calories naturally. It revs your appetite way up, so you're like going to overeat. And that's why, you know, that's why most people that lose weight gain it back, because they're just restricting calories, not fixing their hormones. So anyway, that's what I'm wondering. Jonah Hill looked so skinny and Maniac, like very thin, but he also was like so low energy. And I was wondering if that's, you know, what was he was going through.
Okay. I feel like I have an eating disorder. So
me too.
I was going through therapy just now.
Okay, so that is what is that? That is The Hustle. And then the next movie out next week in wide release is Palms.
We want to start a cheerleading club.
Who will you be cheering for?
Ourselves. Show us what you've got.
The oldest category is 18 plus.
We're 18 plus. 18 plus 50.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Palms. Doesn't look like my type of movie. It's a movie about old women who decide to be cheerleaders.
I think it looks so funny. Diane
Keaton. Are you ageist?
What, Andy?
Are you ageist?
I guess I am. I don't know. Does it look... Do you want to see it?
I do.
Well, Ben does.
I don't think I really want to... I mean, I will see it, but I don't think I'm looking forward
to it.
Seth,
maybe it's like... Did you ever see Red? Retired, extremely dangerous? It's like senior citizen age. The premise is like, yes. These retired people...
I never saw it, but I remember when it came out. It was like... old action heroes, Seth, right?
It's really funny. And John Malkovich is hilarious in it. But what's so funny about that movie is, because I saw it with Lisa and her parents, and, you know, we all enjoyed it, but her parents, like, really enjoyed it. And I think they watched it. Yeah. They used to watch it all the time. Like, something about it resonated with them.
Yeah. So do you think, Ben, in 30 years, this kind of movie will be salivating over it? Will be like, oh, it's so funny. They're 70 years old and they're cheerleaders. That's hilarious.
I don't know. I'm 40 and I still like 18-year-olds.
Like, people you're attracted to are usually very close to your own age.
Ben, Andy just gave us a good sound clip.
Well, I missed it.
But you missed it. You were talking. Sorry, say that again.
Do not, Ben, put that in. I don't, sorry, Ben.
Ben, say it
go
again.
Go back to what you were saying, Ben.
Because Andy was busy giving his comedy gold.
I noticed that I think you're attracted to people that are very similar to your own age.
Yeah, that's true.
Generally.
Or is it like a tribal thing? It's like people that are part of your tribe, maybe?
Yeah.
I did just say that I'm 40 and I'm still attracted to 18-year-olds, but I will agree with Ben. I will agree with Ben what he just said. Like, sometimes I think I'm attracted to 18-year-olds as a 40-year-old, and then I'll see like a 33-year-old or a 36-year-old that's just stunning. And I'm like, and I don't even think about the 18-year-old anymore. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I think there is something to that. Like, we are, maybe we are attracted to people in our age range.
Yeah.
Well, generally is what I mean. Yeah.
But if you were 18 though, Andy, you would be attracted to 18-year-olds, right? But would you ever be attracted to a 50-year-old as an 18-year-old?
Depends how rich she was.
Yeah. What if she was like exactly 50 and you actually met her on her birthday and
on the
there
cruise.
Were no other options?
Well, that's why I brought it up, because on the cruise you made out with a 50-year-old.
Can I tell you guys a Seinfeld moment I've had twice during this podcast?
Sure.
Is the 50-year-old that I made out with on the cruise, she's like, well, what's your podcast? I want to listen. And we had just talked about her. And then
I said, tell her you don't feel comfortable or something.
Yeah, I just said, I just don't feel comfortable with sharing my art yet.
And then you did say my art. I was kind of joking about that part, but did you copy paste what I texted you? Like,
yes.
So I said, yeah, just tell her it's art and you don't feel comfortable sharing your art yet or something.
I copied and pasted. I did do that. I was like, Ben is so sensitive. I love it. And then there's another girl at the gym that I used to teach her ex-husband when they were 18. And she was really cute at 18. And obviously now I'm 40 and she's 25. But the same thing happened. We'd been talking about her in the previous episodes. And I asked her to be on the podcast, and she said, no, I don't like to be the center of attention. But what's the name of your podcast? I want to listen. And I said, I'll send you, when we come out with our, I'll send you a link to the copy when we do it.
That is really funny. I'm shy about the podcast, too. I don't know why. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up. Any final thoughts?
Nope.
I love you.
Okay. Thank you for listening to TWIM. The two things that you can do to help us most are subscribing to our podcast. That helps our rankings in iTunes. And then rating our podcast. That also helps our rankings in iTunes. If you want to contact us, you can reach us on Twitter at @TWIM_weekly. If you want to contact us by email, you can contact us at thisweekinmoviespodcast@gmail.com. I would love to get some audience input on any of these movies. It would be great to have a female perspective on some of these movies. It would be great to have a black perspective on some. If you're, like we talked about, Best of Friends, Best of Enemies.
A lot of shows we've talked about the black
perspective. So, if you're just a fan and you have some insight that we didn't pick up on, I'd love, so just record yourself on your phone if you have an insight you want to share and just email that to us. Okay, that's it. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
The rest of this conversation is spoilers for Avengers Endgame. If you don't want to hear spoilers, then stop listening here. You know what's kind of interesting to think about? Like, imagine somebody disappeared for 5 years and then they came back. And
hey,
like,
that's my ex-girlfriend.
I mean, what I'm saying is, like, if half the population just disappeared for 5 years and then they came back, I don't think they would be like going to school. Everything would be back to normal. What about the people that didn't pay their mortgages for 5 years? Do you think their home is still there? Like, it didn't get foreclosed? Like, what?
Yeah, that's
like,
a good
question. There would be so many long-lasting consequences. Even if everybody came back, it would just still be
messes to deal with.
It would take a century to correct all that, wouldn't it?
There'd have to be reparations.
Just think what it would do the economy of every country. I mean, it would just,
yeah,
it would It would be devastating.
Avenger reparations.
But they only showed like the emotional consequences of people being sad.
Yeah, and that's
so
true.
So are we, I'm not sure how much I want to get into spoiler stuff unless we're in the actual section.
Well, I feel like I don't want to do a separate spoiler section if we can avoid it. If you can be kind of cagey about what you're talking about so people that have seen the movie know what you're talking about, but people that haven't seen it won't be spoiled.
Busty and Russo are going to do it all, spoil it all. All right.
The Russo brothers.
I just feel like I don't want to ruin anyone's enjoyment of it. So at the beginning, the very opening shot, they show one of the Avengers, and it was at the very moment of Infinity War. And it shows one of the Avengers and the family disappearing. So that was such a good scene at first hand to see the kids disappear.
That was the opening scene, right?
That was the opening scene.
And that was a flashback because I hadn't seen the previous movie.
And then it jumps forward. Yeah, and then it jumped forward to present day. So you got to experience his loss, his pain, and then how he dealt with it. And then there was a semi payoff later when he flashes back to that time and sees everyone again.
At the end of the movie,
dealt with him and his loss, and then when they had to get the Soul Stone, it was done so well.
Yeah, it was like each one of the Avengers, it was really interesting to see them deal with it. Because we see what happens to Hawkeye. Like he deals with it in one way, which is like kind of vengeful. We see what happens with Thor, which is like kind of funny, but it's also sad because it's so common. You know?
Real.
Yeah, it's like I think all of us feel like you can see depression leading people to drinking and neglecting themselves, and he's kind of a recluse. Like Valkyrie says, like he hasn't come. I never see him except for when he comes out for beer. And then
it hits home because we all have someone or ourselves in our life like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Seth, what you said last week, because I said, oh yeah, Thor was kind of out of control, and you pointed out, no, he was suffering from he was dealing with the failure. And when I watched it again, what you said made so much sense, because Thor felt like he was such a failure from the end of Infinity War, and that's why he was rushed to make some rash decisions, and it totally made sense in a way I didn't catch it the first time.
I can't wait to see it again because
it's so much better the second time. Oh, someone pointed out that Hawkeye, they never even say, in no Marvel movie ever, they call him Hawkeye. There's one moment where they say, like, oh, that Hawk guy.
And yeah.
I can't remember which one it was. He's like up in the rafters, like shooting arrows or something. They call him, like, kind of refer to him as the Hawk guy. But in the opening of Avengers Endgame, he calls his daughter Hawkeye.
Interesting. So, like, okay, now where is this franchise going to go? Because I feel like they were somewhat foreshadowing what you said with Hawkeye's daughter, but also with Iron Man's daughter. Did you notice that? How she's putting on his mask?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie, there's this part where she's talking about how she likes hamburgers, and Happy Hogan is like, oh, your dad liked hamburgers too. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I hope I didn't just spoil something. But that reminded me a lot, Ben. Do you remember when you were in Denmark for 2 years, you got home, and the first thing you wanted to do, do you remember this?
No.
The first thing you wanted to do when you got home is go to Taco Bell. Because you hadn't had it for 2 years.
I don't remember that.
That's exactly what Iron Man did in the first Iron Man. When he was held hostage, he finally was rescued. He wasn't rescued. He broke out. And he came back to America, and he's like, oh yeah, we'll do a press conference, but first I need to get a hamburger. And they stop at Burger King or something. Do you remember the first Iron Man he did that?
It's vaguely familiar.
Okay, because that was a callback to, at the end of the movie, when Happy Hogan was talking to Iron Man's daughter, that was a callback to that.
Wow, I did not catch that.
And that always reminded me of you when you got back from Denmark. You're like, we got to go to Taco Bell right now.
Remember that night really well, but I don't remember that. So there's also, I think there's going to be a big question mark about Loki. I think there could be a Loki movie because there's a moment when he grabs that thing and disappears.
Oh, you know what? I think Disney Plus is doing a spinoff with him on their new streaming service. And it's going to be a TV show. Yeah. And then we already talked about Gamora because it wasn't clear what happened with her.
Yeah, and I was the second time I was paying attention trying to see her, and I could not see her anywhere towards the end, so I'm not sure.
Okay, so here's what I want to talk about Avengers, because I've read a couple articles about this. Do you remember the scene? There's a final battle scene, and all the women get together, and they're like, hey, we got each other. We're all women. It was kind of like this female power moment. Did you guys remember that?
I do remember that.
Because I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying like, oh my gosh, that was so awesome. Girl power. It was like really like rah, rah girls. But then there were some other people that were saying, including Joanna Robinson, who anyway, she writes for Vanity Fair, saying she hated that moment because it was pandering to a feminist audience. These women didn't even know each other. They've never even had screen time together. And like suddenly they just get together and it's like, hey, I got you, girl. I got your back. And so it seemed really artificial to her.
Yeah.
And then she was also complaining about the treatment of Black Widow and Gamora, because like by the time we get to the final battle scene, all the heroines are not in the picture. We don't know where Captain Marvel is. We don't know where Gamora is. Gamora had been... Joanna Robinson used the term fridged. Have you heard that before?
Fridged?
Like, fridging the girl? Yeah. No. And same with... It's like, I don't know, like I've never heard it till she said it, but she talked about it like it was a common phrase, but it's like
putting her in
get
the
rid
fridge.
Of the female character, maybe for dramatic effect, but also so we, you know, we just don't have to deal with this woman in the plot anymore that's going to hold back the heroes.
Like in Back to the Future Part 2.
What happened? I don't remember.
The very first thing they do is...
She falls asleep.
They go to the future. Yeah, they knock her out and lay her down next to some garbage cans for the whole movie.
That's a good memory.
Yeah, that is a good memory. That's funny because Back to the Future was like a theme in Avengers. So Black Widow, for example, didn't get a funeral, but Iron Man did. Like Iron Man...
Wait, Seth, you're going to have to beep this out or something. Those are big spoilers.
Okay, that is a big spoiler. I'll beep it out.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I don't recall that moment where the women banded together.
Really?
Yeah, I don't recall that at all.
Okay. But yeah,
that is a good point. This movie, they did an incredible job with all of these things about every time something happened that was potentially controversial, they explained it through the dialogue. And when something
like what?
Like, for example, we were talking about last week how Captain Marvel, she's super powerful. She's like, okay, guys, I'm going to help you. And then she's like, oh, I got to go away. Oh, they're like, why are you going away? We need you. And she says, oh, right. Well, other people need my help too. And they're like, okay. And I think how they accepted it was pretty weak there. But I noticed they would signal some of these things before they happened. It would happen, and then later they tie up loose ends through the dialogue. Yeah. It was done really well.
I agree. Mm-hmm. 'Cause they couldn't have Captain Marvel there the whole time. Around half of the things wouldn't have happened. She's too powerful. That's the problem. So they got to sideline her. Same with Scarlet Witch. She's just too powerful. So they got to keep her on the sidelines. So it ends up being a matchup with Thanos and all these male Avengers.
And you know what? Also, there was so much. Like, okay, what happened with Tony Stark? That was signaled through the entire movie. What happened with, I talked about Hawkeye already, his loss, that was being signaled through the movie. But what didn't really jump out at me initially was how intelligent Thanos was. He's like some genius. And the way he delivered his goals made a lot of sense. Like casually, he sounded like really confident where you'd want to agree with him. Except, of course, he can't agree to that kind of stuff. I thought that was really interesting how interesting of a character he was. He wasn't just this evil bad guy for the sake of evil. He was really intelligent.
Yes. He was such a great villain. Yeah, I think that is what makes the difference, is he was intelligent. I mean, on top of that, he can take down the Hulk in a boxing match. I mean, that's impressive by itself, but he's also calculating and like deliberate, and he has like a vision and he has conviction, and I don't know if I could totally understand his goals. Like I didn't quite understand why he wanted to wipe out half of life, but you did believe that he believed that it was best for the universe, and he saw himself as a righteous person.
Oh yeah. Well, everybody does, no matter what. Have you heard that thing in philosophy that no man does evil? Like, well, by your own...
In real life, Ben, yes, that's true. But in comic books, a lot of villains are one-dimensional. Like, look at Game of Thrones. Look at the others, like the White Walkers in Game of Thrones. Do you think they believe they're doing right? We don't know, because they're so one-dimensional. They're just like these zombies. You know what I mean?
Jacob's going to love this, because you're arguing with Ben and putting him in his place.
I mean, but no, Ben, Seth, you're talking about right. people. You're talking about
I'm
real
right,
people.
You're wrong.
But in comic books, that's not necessarily a given. Like Lex Luthor. Do you think he thinks of himself as a good person?
Yeah, that's I hadn't thought about that.
I don't know.
And a lot of times, the villains, they're just motivated by anger or revenge.
Or money or power or something. But Thanos did seem to be... He seemed to really be willing to be a martyr for what he believed in.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about power. It wasn't about money. It wasn't about anger or vengeance or anything like that.
So it was religious, almost like a suicide bomber.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say suicide bomber, because he never intended to die himself. He intended to just wipe out half the population, then go retire somewhere.
It's clear he was willing to. Like how he destroyed the stones. It basically ruined his arm.
Yeah.
Even when, you know, in the final...
That was symbolic too, how knows half his body was burned up from it.
Oh, explain the symbolism.
He used the stones to kill half of life.
Okay, yeah.
And then later when he destroyed the stones, it destroyed about half his body.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So there was symbolism like that through the whole thing.
Did you notice in the first Avengers, the gauntlet that was used to wipe out half of humanity was on their left hand? And then the gauntlet used in Endgame was on the right hand?
No,
did you notice
that? I
didn't
notice that.
I mean, I think I have that right.
So you know what moment was super enjoyable? Okay, I complained a lot about how the audience was yelling and screaming and cheering the first viewing.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw it, the audience didn't make a sound, which is how I like it.
Yeah.
But I had to contain myself for the fight scene with Captain America.
Against
Thanos?
That
was so cool.
I know.
The second time, I thought, even though I knew what was going to happen and I'd seen it again, I was so excited. I thought it was so cool. Because he runs in and he's swinging his arm and he does this huge, like, uppercut. It was so cool.
Yeah, that was so satisfying. The crowd went crazy in our theater when that happened.
Yeah. The second time, I was as excited as the first time, seeing it again.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it again.
There's also a shot I thought was... I was starting to like really respect Thanos as this. Not only is he like physically formidable, he's super, super smart. There's a part where Thor summons lightning and they channel it through
Iron Man.
Yeah, Iron Man's suit, but not Iron Man. It's the Don Cheat. What's his name?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, they channel it through the suit and they shoot this humongous blast at Thanos.
War Machine, right?
War Machine.
Yeah.
This humongous blast at Thanos, and Thanos just grabs Iron Man. So Iron Man absorbs the blast and goes shooting off.
What did you think?
Because you think,
Potts?
That's going to knock him out. And then it just hits Iron Man.
Ben, what did you think of Pepper Potts?
If I were directing the movie, I would not have put her in.
In that final, yeah. Is it because you're a little bit tired of Gwyneth Paltrow, or is it?
You know,
because
it's not about her. Well, her character, the entire her mission, the whole time is to hold back Tony Stark, and she even says stuff like, "My biggest failure in life is that I attempted to hold him back." So she's against him most of the time, and then she kind of reluctantly joins in a little bit. I'm sorry,
I
not against him,
nice.
But she was against, like, she wanted him to settle down and be a dad and stuff, right?
Yes, right. She, like, Tony Stark has this greater purpose, and she's not on board with that. And in the first Avengers, Tony Stark flies off to fight against that wizard that was holding Doctor Strange captive along with Spider-Man. And Pepper Potts calls him. He's like, "Tony, come back home, Tony. You can't do this." And like, the whole time I'm thinking, wow, what a, like, does she not understand the gravity of what he's dealing with? Like,
right.
He's saving the world a second time. Can't she just,
maybe,
like,
that's how most spouses feel about their husband.
Oh, yeah. I think that's, I think it's common for the wife to be like, "Hey, stop working, come home."
Yeah, it's like, you're at work still? What? My wife doesn't do this, but I've overheard this. Like, what are you doing at work still? Why are you still at work? You should be home. And
no, but it was actually, I think for Pepper Potts in that scene, it was more like, "I'm worried for your safety. I don't want you."
Yeah.
I don't want you to get hurt and killed.
Oh, so like Thanksgiving football.
Yeah. Seth, there is a moment.
Still want the 40-year-olds to play tackle football.
I saw this deleted scene. I don't know if I texted it to you a couple years ago when I came across it. It's a deleted scene for the opening of, I want to say, Iron Man 3.
Okay.
It wasn't in the actual theater. It was a deleted scene.
Okay.
So it's the Iron Man where it starts out with Tony Stark and Pepper. They're in an airplane, and he's about to jump down in his Iron Man suit and, like, land on stage and do some, like, performance.
Okay, yeah.
So the way this deleted scene starts out is...
That's Iron Man 2.
Is it Iron Man 2? Okay.
Yeah.
It starts out with Tony Stark. He's, like, hungover. His, you know, he's, like, over the toilet, like, throwing up. You know, the movie starts out with, it shows, like, the logos, like, Marvel, and you just hear the... Like, this horrible, like, you know, he's sick.
Yeah.
And he's, like, staggering around, and Pepper's, like, she says something like, are you feeling okay? What are you going to do? He's like, I'm going to be fine. And she says, okay, well, do you want a My Doll? He's like, you do not offer a grown man a My Doll. And he's arguing with her about just, like, that My Doll thing.
I don't even know what My Doll is. What is that?
So,
oh, I know what it is.
When Andrew I was in knows. High school, My Doll was known you, as the, it's kind of like Tylenol, but for girls when they're on their cycle.
Oh.
Like, okay. To deal with PMS, is that's at least
is
how
like
I heard
pain
about it.
Medication or?
I think it's like Tylenol.
Okay.
It's just a girl Tylenol.
Apparently, or maybe that's just how it's marketed. But it was so funny how he took offense to her offering him a My Doll. But it was hilarious. I'll find it and I'll send it to you.
Huh.